Hey, you want that to go?
Time for some takeouts on stories that we're following this week. And you know, the procedural vote on healthcare yesterday, everyone kind of knew how that was going to turn out pretty much. The thing they didn't know was that first-term Alabama Congressman Parker Griffith was going to defect from the Democratic Party over to the Republicans.
I believe that joining with the Republican Party and standing up against these liberal policies is what is best for our country. It's best for Alabama. It's best for our children's future. It's best for the kitchen tables of the 5th Congressional District.
To explain this, we have Jay Newton Small. She's the Washington correspondent for Time Magazine. You know, Jay, we don't often see people going from the majority party over to the minority. Why did he do this, did he say?
Well, he's a blue dog. He's a freshman first term, and he's really worried about it. I mean, it's been a banner year of spending. There's been tons of money going out the door. He's a fiscal conservative, and he just was so worried that literally electorally he thought it'd be better to run as a Republican than a Democrat.
But he ran as a Democrat, even though the Republicans, when they were in the majority, were also very liberal with spending money.
Well, you know, someone should probably have pointed that out to him before he ran, and certainly the news of his defection was not greeted by open arms with fiscal conservatives within the Republican Party. They lambasted his earmarks. They said he voted for the omnibus bill. They said he voted for Nancy Pelosi. So going from, you know, one of the most conservative Democrats to one of the most liberal Republicans in this day and age is perhaps not the wisest move electorally.
So what about his constituency?
Well, it remains to be seen and how they'll react. Certainly, they elected him last time around as a Democrat, and maybe, on the other hand, the constituency is very conservative. They, at the same time, elected John McCain with 61% of the vote.
Okay, Alabama Congressman Parker Griffith, now on the Republican side of the tally there.
Knows which
Thanks
way the
to
wind
Jay
is
Newton
blowing.
Small. She's the Washington, Washington correspondent for Time Magazine.
He knows which way the wind is blowing. Yeah, for our money takeout now, we're joined by Dan Gross, columnist for Newsweek and Slate.com. We know that the big banks have mostly paid back their TARP funds, but there are some other exit strategies that the federal government needs to put in place to get out from government takeovers of business. The main areas where federal intervention right now is in housing and in interest rates. Let's start with housing, Dan. What's the exit strategy from government intervention in the housing market?
Well, this is going to be the toughest one of all. There's been these high-profile banks, you know, repaying their TARP money, which is all to the good. But we have huge involvement in the housing sector. We own Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. The Federal Housing Authority has purchased about 40% of the mortgages, you know, a big chunk of the mortgages made this year. But the Federal Reserve, this is less well known, over the past year has bought $900 billion in mortgage-backed securities. Basically, it's going in and purchasing mortgages or the bonds backed by them in an effort to keep mortgage rates down. That's one of the reasons mortgage rates are so low. That's not sustainable for the central bank to hold on to that much stuff and keep buying. So one of the exit strategies we have to look for in 2010 is the Federal Reserve reporting every week its assets and liabilities, whether that number, the mortgage-backed securities, starts to go down.
But isn't there
a year ago, it was close to zero.
Isn't there also a fear? There must be a fear that to the extent that the Fed and the federal government is propping up the housing market, that if they execute the exit strategy, the housing market would tank.
Exactly, and I think that is why they have been so reluctant. You know, what we've seen as the government has been exiting from some areas of the financial sector. You know, all these guarantees of banks' debt and the money market funds and the commercial paper market, those were lifted throughout 2009 with very little fanfare, very little problem. At the same time, we were getting more involved, putting more assets, putting more of our kind of credibility on the line in guaranteeing different components of the housing market, and that is not showing any signs of letting up just yet.
All right, let's hit interest rates real quick. We need some exit strategies on interest rates.
Right. The big question for 2010 on exit strategies: how the Fed gets out from its 0% interest rates. You
0%.
Can't give away money for free to banks forever, much as they would like it. And then, again, it's this tightrope. How do you start to raise interest rates without choking off whatever recovery there is?
All right. The United States military is not the only one looking for exit strategies. The Fed and the federal setters of interest rates looking for them, too. Dan Gross, columnist for Newsweek and Slate.com. Thanks.
Okay, now for Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen with our takeout on sports. He's back for his second suggestion on you have a list of 10 most memorable stories from 2009, and here is number two. And what is it?
Serena Williams, of course. She was voted the 2009 Female Athlete of the Year by AP yesterday. And I think that there's a couple things that we have to remember. We all remember the famous foot fault incident, but I just want to remind you, she earned $6.5 million this year. She won 5 Grand Slam tournaments, and she had a record of 50-12. She had a very dominating year. But everyone will remember her big moment was in the U.S. Open against Kim Clijsters.
Are you serious? I didn't threaten to kill you.
What's the rest of it?
So let's listen to that right now.
Unbelievable scenes here at the U.S. Open. I guess they've made a decision to default Serena Williams on match point down.
And that basically led to her losing the match. And it also placed her on
a large fine.
Exactly, in a large fine. It placed her on also a 2-year probation, which I think is the most interesting part of it. So she's on a probation at any Grand Slam tournament for the next 2 years. And if nothing happens, her fine could be reduced. So there's some stuff here.
I think she could pay the fine.
Especially with the $6.5 million earnings. But this also brought up a lot of issues on, we blogged about it on the Takeaway site, and I think it touched off a lot of issues of race and class and gender, and that was the most striking part of it, and why this, to me, was one of the most memorable stories, because it brought up in some other people just the feeling that, you know, she was slighted because of her race, or feelings that people were using the race card unfairly. So I think this is definitely, without a doubt, one of the most memorable sports stories of 2009.
Okay, we're going to get to story number 3 and count down your top 10 with Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen. Coming up, retailers are hoping to get more money out of a holiday shoppers by personalizing some pretty surprising gifts. That's coming up later in this hour.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.